You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 3rd of June. We've got local GDP Q1 data due at 11:30. Expect a rough number. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud via hotels in Cape Town. On the show today, Pietie Redenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. We chatted with him a couple of times in April. He was calling the US markets quite spot on. It's almost back at highs. It is above Liberation Day levels. Question is it time to be long or short? Stacey Rochos, she's from Bannister Trust and Hobson Clare. When do you actually need a trust? And then Rena Fissi, ETF FSA, a whole bunch of UBS ETNs issued over all sorts of interesting indices. I want to dig into those. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Robex jumps 10.5%, strong results announcement, and that probe finds no evidence to support whistleblower allegations. Business Day, Deputy Health Minister takes aim at tobacco companies as more teens take up vaping. Government accuses tobacco industry of creating a new generation of nicotine addicts with e-cigarettes. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P up 0.4%, NASDAQ up 0.7%. The East is mostly green. We got Sydney down 0.33%, Tokyo up 0.2%, Hong Kong 1.33% higher, and Tencent 1.2% higher. Commodities, all green. Gold futures, 3,391. Brent, 6501. Platinum, 1,061. Palladium, 996. The Rand is 1788. Bitcoin is 105,500. And top 40 opening call, a green open, 170 points or 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Pietie Redenhuis. You find him, of course, at Herenia Capital Advisors. Pietie, appreciate the time. You and I have chatted a few times in the over the course of the year. I'm going to remind you, back on 1st of April, of course, that was ahead of Liberation Day. Markets had been falling. I asked your take on where next. You said about another 10% down. It's pretty much exactly what we did. 2 weeks later when we chatted, you said, yeah, you thought the selling was over. You thought it was time to bounce. We did bounce. We have bounced. We're not back at all-time highs, but we're at highs for the year and we're just off the all-time highs. Looking at US markets, where next?
Can we make it three in a row?
No pressure.
Good morning, Simon. The way that it looks now, really just from a charting perspective, is it looks like there's a little bit of resistance at, call it the 6,000 level on the S&P 500. Mm-hmm. If we break through that, I think we make all-time highs. I think that's the easy trade at this stage, is to stay higher. It seems that we've had a decent pullback to, one of the longer-term trends, which was that pullback we saw in April, and now we have a bit of a grind up higher to new highs. Unless a significant catalyst comes out to pull the market down, or 6,000 manages to put up so much resistance that the market can't trade up through it, I don't see any reason for the market to come back down to, where it was in the April-ish, sort of the 5,000 mm-hmm. level or below, right? So even looking at the chart now, there's a shorter term pattern which looks like a pennant or a triangle pattern. So the market's kind of rallied up really strongly into this pennant formation, and these generally are trend continuation patterns. So they continue, to move in the way that the move out of them continues in the direction that the move into them was. If you look at it now from the lows of April, which was around the first week of April, the end of the first week of April, 6th, 7th, around there, into now has kind of formed, a nice little uptrend followed by a little pennant formation where the market's kind of squeezing sideways a little bit, but the lows continue to be formed higher and higher. I think it breaks higher and we we probably can't go on to making all-time highs. I mean, I think that this is also mostly driven by fundamental things. You know, the trade negotiations, if you want to put it that way, or trade wars or tariff wars or whatever the buzzword for it is today, is actually, you know, not going as badly as what people thought it would. We've seen Trump's negotiation tactic is come out the gate strong, make outlandish claims and make outlandish demands. This really scares everybody. At least it scares them to the negotiation table. And once you're sitting down, he says, all right, off with the tariffs, let's make a deal. And so far that's worked every time, right? And also, I mean, this is part of the, I think, homework for all of us is to read his book, The Art of the Deal, because it's exactly what he's doing. He's following the blueprint that he published like 20 years ago. So, yeah, basically, I think that from here, unless there's some significant catalyst where things do not go, you know, the way that it looks like it's going at the moment. In other words, countries are unwilling to negotiate, or there's some sort of a gross escalation of conflict in the Middle East. I don't really see too much actually standing in the way of markets trading higher.
Okay, some more highs up there. Art of the Deal, gent, actually 40 years ago. It was November 87 that was published and written by Tony Swartz. But I take your point. The market is looking good, and certainly I can see it. If we can get through the sort of medium-term levels, new highs, we'll take that absolutely. Pietler Redenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors, appreciate the early morning. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Stacey Ruchoz. She's attorney specializing in estate planning, managing director at Bannister Trust and Estate Planning, and consultant at Hobbs Sinclair. Stacey, appreciate the time. Family trusts, I want to dig into, but I suppose the first question is, how do we know when we're ready for a trust, or is this too many moving parts and there's no sort of one line in the sand?
Well, Simon, trusts are something that a lot of people don't know a lot about. It's definitely a financial tool that is not very well written about, or, you know, companies and things like that have a lot more common knowledge about. So I'd say it's quite a nuanced version on whether or not a trust is good for you. There are obviously some very great advantages to having a family trust. It's a fantastic tool for estate planning, especially if you have young children. You can keep your assets rolling along even after you die without having a lot of tax implications. But a trust also comes with a lot of obligations and a lot of admin that a lot of people aren't ready for.
And perhaps that's the challenge. It is setting up one. I mean, maybe that decision is a little bit borderline. Sometimes it might be an easy decision that you need a trust, but be aware of the admin. And truthfully, I imagine that admin is coming with the cost as well.
Exactly. Firstly, you need to... A trust needs annual financial statements to be drawn up every year. So you need to have a trust accountant to make sure that that is all filed with tax. There needs to be a trust bank account, which will have bank charges. And it's very advisable that you have an independent trustee who assists with a lot of the compliance, because, you know, the average layperson doesn't necessarily know what exactly needs to get done as the master of the High Court.
Absolutely. And it is. I mean, your point around the layperson, that trusts are specialized vehicles. It needs those specialists in it. It's also, as I understand, I mean, one of the points around is that the donor needs to properly replenish control. You can't sort of stand in the background. You've got to be prepared to say, I'm putting these assets into a trust, and now the trustees will manage this process.
Exactly. I mean, there definitely was a Wild West sort of time with trusts back in the 90s and early 2000s, where people would just set up a trust and run it as if it was their own asset. But SARS is definitely cracking down on what they call sham trusts, where founders try to keep one hand on the wheel and pretty much use trust assets as their own assets. So it's very important that whoever's setting up the trust, the donor of the trust, needs to genuinely relinquish control of that trust in order to ensure that there's proper compliance.
Who would be the trustees then? These are, I imagine, going to be sort of independent third parties. Is that fair?
So you can be a trustee as well as a beneficiary. Okay. So if you're setting up a family trust, you can be the donor, a trustee, and a beneficiary. But you generally need at least 2 to 3 trustees, and one of them should be completely independent and also administer trusts on the regular.
Gotcha. Another issue, and I'm not sure how often this happens, but in the dissolving, now, in theory, the trust is going to outlive you. That is the purpose of it. But sometimes circumstances, things happen. Is it an easy process to dissolve a trust if you, if, I suppose, in a sense, changed your mind?
So if you dissolve a trust, you firstly need to make sure that all of your tax obligations are fully up to date. Mm-hmm. So if you have a trust that has not been paying its tax on a regular or even registered for tax, you now might have to catch up on 20, 30 years of back taxes before you close it. Also, all of your assets have to be distributed out, which, you know, if those assets have been sitting there since the 90s, you might have a huge amount of capital gains tax and other tax that is just sitting there, and that all needs to be settled before you close. If your trust has nothing in it and everything, all the admin's been done properly, then it can be a relatively simple thing to just have it go and be dissolved. But if you have a trust that's just been gathering dust for quite a few years, it could actually be a lot more of a hassle than you think to close it. And now it's this thing that is just accumulating risk on you. Because just now SARS comes knocking and says, what's happening? You're a trustee. You need to make sure that this is properly regulated.
Is there, you mentioned CGT on the exit, and one of the things I'm pondering, when I'm setting up a trust, does that create a tax event for me as I'm transferring assets into the trust, or can I transfer the CGT liability that I've accrued, if that makes sense?
You can either donate assets to a trust, which will accrue donations tax at a flat 20% rate, or you can put assets into a trust and the trust will then create a loan account with you. So, and then the idea is to put assets into a trust that generate income over time that will essentially pay that loan back to you. That's the most cost-effective way of adding assets in, because obviously you don't want to spend that 20% donations tax.
Yeah, agreed 100%. It also makes me think that if you, I don't know, if you're on that path where one day you're going to need a trust, it might be 5 or 10 years' time, there might be an argument to get in perhaps a little bit earlier.
Oh, 100%. The best assets to put in a trust are small assets, like you setting up an investment portfolio for the first time. You start off small and it grows over time. That way you don't have that asset in your own name 40 years from now when you're passing. And instead, then it doesn't fall into your estate. You don't pay estate duty. And it's there for you and your heirs if you ever need cash. So that way you can run the trust sort of like a family bank.
Gotcha. And in that case, early might be better, although run the numbers and get an expert. We'll leave it there. Stacey Rogers, attorney specializing in estate planning. You find her managing director, Bannister Trust and Estate Planning, and a consultant at Hobbs Sinclair. Stacey, appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Nerina Fisser, Director ETFSA. Nerina, appreciate the early morning. A couple of weeks ago, we were at an ETFSA breakfast. You had printed out some of the documents around the different exchange-traded products. And I have to admit to something, there was a whole bunch I'd never seen before. In the ETN space, we've got the F&B individual stocks, some indices. Standard Bank's got an oil and a copper. Absa's got a currency and a commodity set. But UBS, Union Bank of Switzerland, a whole bunch I'd never heard of. Space, oil and gas, robotics and drones, some amazing indices and ETNs lurking on the JSE pretty much in plain sight. Notwithstanding, I completely missed them.
Absolutely. Good morning, Simon. Yes, indeed. You know, we've had such a proliferation of exchange-traded products listing on the JSE to the point where we now have 280 of these, outnumbering the number of direct shares that you can buy on the JSE. So it's not surprising that not just you, but I think most other people have missed some of these more interesting and unusual investment opportunities that are offered via these exchange-traded products.
And the benefit of them, I mean, going through them, and there's a bunch of them, I haven't checked all of them, but they are linked to indices. They are passive, although yes, many of these indices we might not have heard of, but that is the key point. They are classic ETNs.
Absolutely. So, Simon, I often equate an index tracking product as really baking a cake, following a recipe. And you can buy, you know, you can bake a cake that's a very simple one, maybe just a chocolate cake or a carrot cake or a cheesecake. Or you can decide that you want to get a bit more exotic and go for a red velvet cake or a black forest cake. Or then you can go for the triple layer chocolate ganache gâteau or the rum infused strawberry baked cheesecake. You get my point. I think the important thing is, what is a recipe? It tells you what are the ingredients and what are the quantities that you need in your product. And that's exactly what an index does. It tells you what are the ingredients, the stocks, the shares that's in there, and what are the quantities. How many of each of these do you have in there? And so the index tracker product is just going to replicate that index by giving you exactly the exposure of it. Now, in an ETF, a physically backed exchange traded fund, the fund manager actually buys each of those underlying constituents as it is in the index. Whereas an ETN, the exchange traded note, what you are getting there as an investor is a promise from the bank to pay you the performance of that index. So UBS, being the issuing bank here, effectively owns this on their balance sheet. And the promise that they've sold to you through the ETN is that whatever that particular reference index does over time, you will receive that performance. There are many benefits. Let's maybe, before we go into the benefits, let's maybe just talk about some what people might be concerned about. So, I don't own this investment. You know, is that safe? Well, as I often say to people, you know, it is really as safe as it would be to have a savings account with that bank. You know, so you talk about the Standard Bank oil and copper ETN. So, you know, you can't very well store a barrel of oil in the basement of Standard Bank or even in your garage. Whereas buying the oil ETN gives you the exposure to what the price of oil does in rand terms over time. So there's the benefit that although you get the you've got the added credit risk of the issuing bank, you are able to get access to investments that you wouldn't otherwise easily be able to get access to. The other major benefit is the cost. Because the bank does not physically need to buy those underlying assets, the whole basket, the whole index of shares, it's cheaper, and therefore they're able to deliver this for you with much closer certainty in terms of the performance of the index. So it definitely is a cheaper, less more cost-effective version. And then the final one, if we just differentiate ETNs, the exchange traded notes, which are index tracking, with the AMCs, the actively managed certificates, is the transparency of that index. If you go through that list and you look up at this, you can go and Google the name of the index, and it's going to tell you exactly what's in that index, how the, you know, what are the index rules, how does it get chosen, how does it get constructed. So you as an investor know at all times exactly what your underlying exposure is. And that transparency, I think, is incredibly powerful in the era that we live in, where people want to know, where's my money going, you know, and what is it actually being invested in?
Yeah.
And am I comfortable with that investment exposure that I've got?
Yeah. And the one index, for example, Selective Robotics and Drones Net Return Index. It's a mouthful, but you can go and find it and see what it is. I also like the ingredient metaphor, because that's kind of how we use these, in the sense that there would be sort of tactical satellites around. There are two challenges with ETNs. They can't go into the tax-free account, and ultimately they expire as well. Whereas an ETF essentially is perpetual.
That's absolutely right. So, yes, let's quickly talk about the tax-free accounts. The rules around the law around the tax-free accounts requires not just a physically backed investment, but it has to also be registered with the FSCA as a collective investment scheme. So, or unit trust, as most people would colloquially refer to it. This also means that the likes of the physical commodity ETFs, the gold, platinum, and so on, also can't be used in tax-free accounts. So, yes, the ETNs can't go in your tax-free account. And yes, they do have an expiry. They typically get issued for a five-year term. And often, most often, they get automatically rolled at the end of the 5 years for another 5 years. We've started to see the introduction of some perpetual notes where effectively they run into maturity. But I think what you've got here is that the issuing bank has got the option to just indefinitely almost roll you into a longer dated maturity in terms of these products. So yes, they do have a maturity, but I like your analogy that the use of these often works quite well as a tactical tilt or as a, you know, sort of a nod towards an investment theme that you want to get exposure to. So having to sort of from time to time reevaluate these, maybe trade into a different portfolio tilt is quite appropriate with these sort of exchange traded notes. And I think they certainly have more benefit than they have disadvantages. But it is important for investors to actually go and look and see what's in that index, what's the underlying. Don't look at the past performance, please. That's not a way to evaluate an investment. Go and look what's inside it, what's under the hood, and that's going to tell you something about what sort of performance can I expect from the exchange traded note going forward.
Absolutely. And yeah, you can go figure out how they work, what's in them, and if it fits your particular slant. And I take your point. The benefits absolutely outweigh the disadvantages. Nirina Fisser, ETF SA, always appreciate your early morning time. That's it for today. Our poll today is with Petri Ratenhase. Markets back above their Liberation Day levels. He says we're moving higher. What's your take on it? Higher, maybe down, or maybe we're going to drift. We are sideways for about the last week or 10 days or so. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Yesterday we were chatting with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth, the Anglo-American demerger of Volterra Platinum. We asked if you were keeping your Volterra shares. Over half said yes, great opportunity. Third said you don't have Anglo. The rest were saying nope, you are selling ASAP. Podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabuchle, Nicole, to you for listening. My guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Private credit.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.